Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are over the moon to be sitting down with Dorina Garland, co-founder and co-CEO of Uni. We have a great conversation about what she likes cooking during the summer, why she keeps a garden and everywhere she's lived, what she likes to listen to when she's around the oven, and how the future of Uni is being shaped with an eye on environmentalism. And then we dig into the archives from a classic performance from Prima, who's a rock project from Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter Rose Blanchie. She played for us back in 2017 with her debut EP called Performance, and is one of our favorites for the summertime. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network.
To say I wouldn't wish it upon a soul, but some of us have earned a little more. Cosmic judgment or whatever you call it.
Skin.
Dorina, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I have to say, I think you are our first guest direct from Scotland. So thank you for for adding another flag to our international chart of people.
Oh, thanks for having me. That's great.
Yeah,
representing.
Yeah. Huge fan of you guys and Uni and thankful enough to have gotten an oven from you guys this summer and been cooking and, you know, reading all about your story, and I read the cookbook and everything. It really seems that like family and community are at the center of your business and your life. How much do those two tenets drive what you do?
Oh, yeah, it's really great that's come across. It's absolutely central. You're right. Prior to starting Uni, Christian and I, my husband and I, we worked in education, and our whole kind of raison d'etre, the focus of our work, was to try and bring all stakeholders together to transform learning communities. And so, you know, often at like an education conference, you might get like the same great teacher on the stage or principal teacher, and then, but no parents and no like, I don't know, tech games companies or like NGOs or governments. Like, so bringing people together and getting that really multi-stakeholder approach to events. We started running festivals because we wanted to have that real connection, and we could see what could change when you have a real connection. So that was like the groundwork that happened before we had Uni, and we really learned how you can make things happen when you have a community. So when we started Uni, it was launched on Kickstarter back in 2012, and we could instantly feel the community growing, like excited passion for pizza and for this a new category we created. So and then just having that authentic relationship with the community built it. And it obviously, I know that this is your interest as well, but like pizza, I think, is probably the ultimate bringing people together social food. So it lends itself to that on so many levels. People want to have like old school dinner parties, but they want to have them more informally now. And come over, like people literally jumping across their fences to hang out with their neighbors. And Uni definitely lends itself to that, the way that you can cook, you know, and preparing the dough. But then there's this cute like online community, because, well, there is a social media and people love to share their beautiful creations and like talk about their recipes. So Instagrammable. And also their disasters and go like, oh, I burnt it. I couldn't believe it was 60 seconds.
Also
So there's so many layers of community. And when Christian had the original idea for Uni, we lived in London at the time, had a tiny back garden, and we just had our first son, Oscary, who's now 12. The business has always fitted around our family, and that's been a big part of how we've designed Uni. And sort of in terms of our own team, we have about 360 people now around the world, and very sort of flexible and like ultimately a very community feel about how we approach the business as well. So yes, I could talk about this for days. It's a really huge part of our focus.
I mean, it's such a beautiful thing, and you're absolutely right, because we've already had this summer getting people together. Let's make some pizza. You bring the chilled drinks. We'll get the dough, the toppings, and lay it out. And there's a few things about the business that I want to talk to in a little bit, but I really want to get into the cooking, like, and the hangs that you've had, because, you know, what I see from online and what I saw, again, from the cookbook, it just looks like a really good time when you guys get together and cook. So what have you been cooking this summer? And then also, I know you're a super big fan of music. What have you been listening to while you're cooking? Do you have a different like prep music? And then like when the oven gets going, like, is that a different soundtrack?
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Your gatherings.
I'm just back from Finland this week, where Christian's from. And actually Christian, the boys, our two children are still there. We cook loads over there. And we went to a party of one of our good friends, Yuka, whose wife turned 40. Mm. And he's actually started a business called Slicemonger. So he's one of our ambassadors as well. Like, he's a photographer, but he started his own pizza-based business after finding Uni. So he was also, that was all around food, that event. And he cooked pizzas at the end of the night. Actually, his, I think, 17-year-old son was cooking these like New York slice places for everyone at the end of like when we're all a bit drunk. That was a really music focused thing, because he's also he's a musician and he has his own stuff. But then him and his brother brought back this like special guest appearance of their band, which is called Tiger Bombs. They're Tampere in Finland, so a really tiny random band. And they haven't played for 15 years. So that was like
an
awesome musical event. It was so great in this like a wooden kind of, it's called a cartano, like a wooden sort of little old house, like, and it felt like a very informal wedding, but it was Eva's 40th. So incredibly cool, you know, post-pandemic to do those gatherings again. It was, and it's, they're so foodie in Finland. So it was fantastic.
But also like, speaking of post-pandemic, like everyone's touching the pizza, everyone's grabbing slices, like everyone's in the mix.
Yeah.
Before it was like, I'll make you a pizza. You get your own pizza. You sit 6 feet from me and it's fine. But now it's like everyone's in, you sprinkle the sauce, maybe there's some mushrooms and things like that. You know, talking about all of your travel, like being in Finland and you're in Scotland, and I know you spent time in London. What I've also noticed with you, you've always had either your own garden or an access to a garden. Like there's always been this like very an organic, and excuse the pun, but like access to different ingredients and things like that. And I know it changes from wherever you are because, you know, the terroir changes and things like that. But what has been the importance to you? How much that inspired these gatherings and the business as well, is like knowing that you always had a little garden or sometimes a bigger garden wherever you are in the world.
Yeah, we have a really amazing garden here in Edinburgh now, which is mainly fruit. There's grapes and loads of plums now. We're trying to protect our dog who gained a lot of weight last year, just like eating the plum, the Victoria plums as they fell from the tree. It's funny you say that because we showed last year we had a big celebration for Uni turning 10. It was 10 years since we launched the Kickstarter. Thank you. And we brought the entire team for all over the world. So, you know, we've got a team in the Philippines and Australia and like I met a lot in America and Germany and loads of places. So the whole team together. And we showed some video footage of our first ever uni that we made. And it was so basic and like Frankenstein-esque. And the pizza looked honestly so crap, but we were so excited because it worked. But the reason I'm telling you this was because our garden, it was like a crack den. It was like, it was so dodgy. And we were joking about how bad it was. It was a tiny sort of back garden that like we rented that house. We got it like that. And we did turn it around a little bit. But the team, we were joking on stage when we presented this. And they were like, no, it really does look like that. It's not that wholesome. But then, now it's seasonality. In terms of when we're in Finland, Christian's mum, she has a massive garden. They've got a lake at the bottom of her garden and forests everywhere. There's a lot of wild mushrooms and foraging, and it's really wholesome. They're literally fishing from the lake to, you know, get fish for the pizzas and or just to roast up on cast iron. And then she has like an allotment garden. So a lot of courgettes, courgette flowers, obviously basil and herbs. So that is my ultimate, you know, where you can just take things straight from the garden and then cook them up really fast. Oven dream.
With the heat here, our garden's touch and go, but whenever like the rosemary or something that is blossoming, I'm always like, I'll add that to the sauce. I feel my little green thumb.
I'm obsessed with rosemary. It's so funny that you said rosemary, because when we got this house, it's a lovely house. It's from 1711, it was built, so very old, loads of history. And then we got here, and my child, youngest boy, who was about seven at the time, went, "Oh, thank God, there's a rosemary bush." I was like, "That's the most middle class thing you could have said." I was like, "Ah."
Yes, I've taught you well. You know, speaking of the kids and even knowing what a rosemary bush is, are they in the kitchen with you now? Are they cooking? Have they been like, "Mom, I'll work the oven. Yeah. Dad, I got this." Like, you know, have they started rolling your eyes and you're like, "I invented this oven. I invented this oven." How much are they getting, rolling up their sleeves and getting in the mix?
Yeah, no, they really love it. And they made, a couple of years ago, they made a little video called Little Pizzaiolos. They're like, I don't know, most children, they want to have their own YouTube channel. I'm like, no, you're not having that.
No,
not yet. It's a brutal world. But they've always made pizzas, and they're kind of waiting till they can have their turn and stretch the dough and yeah, absolutely. They absolutely love it. You were saying about music, though, and one of the things to your point about how everyone's back in interacting and not worried about COVID. I remember during the pandemic thinking, you know, will we ever go to a pub again? And like, what will it be like? And then instantly we went to South by Southwest and I was like crammed in a venue. Oh, like, it was so beautiful. Like, and it was just completely back. That week was amazing. I saw like Ezra Furman there for the first time. That was one of my favorite songs, like playing I Love You So Bad. And then the same week it was Dolly Parton's first ever South by Southwest. And we were literally at the front of that. And then we went to Willie Nelson's ranch. So those are Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton are probably my absolute favorite artists ever. So we saw them both like in consecutive days. So they play quite a lot in the house. And then other stuff that we can listen to this summer, for whatever reason, maybe it's just the people catching up with their concerts, the live dates that didn't happen.
Oh yeah.
We had Elton John here and that was really cool. So we've been playing that quite a lot, and Beyonce played and Harry Styles was here, and like, yeah, just live music again. So it's been all quite like big performances of late, but yeah, that feels like it's like stadium time again.
I absolutely feel you. I feel like I'm going to a show every other week, once a week, and there's this connectivity. It's so great because, like, you know, the Beyonce stuff shows haven't come here yet, and everyone's like I want to peek a little bit what's going on in Scotland. I want to see a little bit, but I don't want to ruin it too much and things like that. But there's that. I mean, that's the thing, is like that connectivity of music and food and gathering. It just feels that it's just back, and I missed it. I don't think I realized how much I missed it. You know,
same. And it's all at once now. We're like, I was like, why are all these people here? And it was Bruce Springsteen was playing. I didn't go to that, but I was like, I kind of wish I did book that. But yeah, the Beyonce was funny. The only thing that made me laugh about that was she was doing her like amazing wind machine effect. Her hair was amazing. She's like, this is the first rain I've ever had. And then she was playing Edinburgh out in the open. And she's like, this is the first rain on tour. It's so refreshing. We were like, oh, for you. She still looked great.
You're like, you could take the rain. We get enough. All right. Let's take a quick musical break. And then when I come back, I want to talk about some of the company side, the business side, and how environmentalism has been playing a big part in looking forward. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Say anything, it's you and me. Looking out the window, out the window, out the window. The things go on, do anything. There's nothing better, nothing better, nothing better.
Out the window, out the window, out the window. The things go on, do anything.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Dorina Garland, co-founder and co-CEO of Uni. And in the first part, you mentioned you had just celebrated your 10-year anniversary last year. And congratulations, but also being a small business, being any business these days that lasts and succeeds and grows in 10 years is an accolade unto itself. But what have you seen as a shift in business and in business culture over the last decade, for better or for worse?
Oh, thank you. I don't think we are a small business now. It feels like we hark back to, like, can we keep that soul of the startup? But I guess we're big. We're trying not to be corporate at all as we get bigger. I think that lots of stuff is for better, honestly. So that when we started Uni, we came from an education background. We wanted to create a company for good. We wanted to build it with our team and with the community. And then, like, we did think that we've always done, given 1% of our turnover to social and environmental causes, now quite a lot of money. And, like, we, you know, how can we best use that for essentially sustainability and saving the world and working, doing our part to try and do that? And hunger relief is another big part of that, because they're kind of, obviously that's part of our narrative with a food-based company. But when we first started doing that, I remember we had a PR who was based in LA, and she was like, well, people, you know, it's like, it's not really news. It's not, you know, there's Patagonia, there's companies that care about good things. And I was like, well, it's fine. That's not why we're doing it. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's not for press. But then we saw that our team, as we onboarded more and more people, they really cared about that. And now, as you'll probably notice, the consumers really care that you have an authentic, purpose, first of all, but also you do actually care about that. And so that's been a really nice shift in terms of how people think about organizations and, you know, where, like, as money gets tighter, actually people think more mindfully about how they spend it, and they actually do research. And, you know, buying a pizza oven is a considered purchase. As much as we've tried to make it as accessible as possible, still a considered purchase. And they want to know, you know, this is a company, like, the reason Christian created the original Uni is because we wanted to make great pizza. So that idea spreads like wildfire, and having an affordable way to do that at home. But then they're like, okay, how do you care about the planet? And we've actually, at Uni as 10 last year, we launched our wild goal of trying to become a regenerative business, which ultimately is the point being that we can't sustain. Like, sustainability is not really a good word, because if we just sustain where we're at as a planet, like, everything is not going to work. So we're trying to work with lots of other organizations and make decisions as a business based on a triple bottom line. So thinking about profit, planet, and people in our decision making. And then with regenerative, you actually have to do more good than harm. And, you know, all organizations can, it's complicated. You know, the best thing you could probably do is not have a business or not have a child. You know, there's things like that.
But no,
we're looking at how we can use Uni's growth to power good decisions. And yeah, we recently became a B Corp. That was the start of this year, as part of that journey. And it's great to have. It's actually super, super challenging. But then what can we do more, and how can we be a leader in the regenerative world? And yeah, and like, part of that, you talked about community right at the beginning. Like, you know, we need the community to help. We need our team to help and be thoughtful about decisions, but also it's such a new world. So we're doing things like a lot of carbon removal rather than just carbon offsets. We're doing a lot of that. We've planted a lot of trees, and it seems like our audience, our consumers care about that, because it's so tangible. But we're like, we have to do way more than plant 5 million trees. It's like, what else is there? And that's where we're working now. So we've hired a head of regenerative business. She came from The Body Shop, and she's amazing. So yeah, that was one of our things that we're trying to change. I think that's been the biggest change in terms of our business culture. And I think, like, we've always prioritized. So Christian and I run Uni from the beginning, and he's more product focused, and I would say I'm more team and culture focused. We've always put the two things as like culture and values in our organization as important as the innovation and the products we put out. So that has been good to see how especially team members, employees, they care about that too. They want to know that you've got a team that are happy. They look at Glassdoor, they look at, and we can happily say that that's a huge asset for our growth and our team generally. So, but yeah, business has changed. I think it's actually, you're seeing more of a divide between organizations that do genuinely care, and I don't think that we're alone at all. There's a lot more purpose driven, and then there's others that you're like, oh, old school.
Well, I mean, speaking of that, because sometimes it's just bottom line, and you know, you have these initiatives as long as it works with, you know, the money coming in, but have you made decisions that are better for the environment that are not as good for the business? I know I read something about like oven trade-in things, which obviously is not the classic model where it's like, oh, you bought a vacuum cleaner and it broke, we'll buy a new vacuum cleaner. So what are some of the things that you've done that have maybe been not as good for the business, but better for the earth?
Loads of things where it looking at kind of shipping partners and things that are more expensive. When we renovated our entire offices, I think our heating system was about 4 times more because it was a greener option. Product design, like paying more for materials and processes, because we know we want to kind of reduce fuel consumption. Creating a company, giving 1% of all money of our entire turnover to like innovative causes, and looking at how we can best support that. So, but it's really topical actually, because we've got a regenerative business strategy kickoff meeting next week. And one of those things is like, how, I mean, it started, but it's really now all the leadership are engaged and like, how are we, what the next steps to, we've got our plan, how to do it. And Kate asked exactly that, like, to what extent do you care about the revenue? And, you know, we need to continue to make profit and to invest that in good decisions and have a sustainable business in the true sense, that we can keep on having great place to work and, you know, designing new products. But we've never started any for the money. Like, that, it's amazing how well it's been doing. The biggest thing now, I think, that we can do is keep growing, keep innovating, keep pushing the envelope and designing awesome things, but have a legacy where it's a company that you're actually proud of. And that is definitely going to prioritize planet and people.
I mean, going back to what we talked about earlier about, you know, you having a garden, you having these children, you having this community, on a personal level, I have to imagine that if you could have a business that could also be good for the earth, it aligns with what you want just as a person and as a mom and as a friend.
We were saying that, and I think I might ask her to do it, Kate's presentation to our exec team and to our leadership team generally. It's kind of the stuff that if you see what is happening, it, like, once you know, you can't not care. Like, oh yes, we have children, and I think, like, fundamentally, I know you do too. You're like, you think about it from their eyes. But like you say, I honestly defy most people, any people, to look at this stuff and not care. I think it's so broken, you know, like using the Earth's resources so much earlier and earlier. And as we chatted about before we started recording, the temperature in Europe just now, it's real. It's and it's such a short timeline. So yeah, absolutely. Like, end of the day, there's a lot of heart at the heart of Uni, and we wouldn't want something we weren't proud of. And there's clearly things, you know, that any business leader should think about in terms of impact. But yeah, we can't not do stuff. And I think that it's really helpful when you get overwhelmed about how hard the challenges in front of us in terms of climate change and as a universe, not just Uni. I feel buoyed by knowing there's lots of other people who are interested too and who are doing stuff that we can learn from and connect with. So that is helpful.
Yeah. Well, you know, bringing up leadership and moving away from some of the, like, the environmental and business, over the last decade, leadership and approach to running companies has changed so much. You know, there's definitely been a reckoning in some places, if you want to use that strong of a word, of being like, what does it mean to be a leader of a business, to people demanding more for the companies on both ways. How have you shifted as a leader and being that someone looks to and saying, you know, come join our company, and this is what you can expect from a culture and from me being at the top.
Yeah, I think that actually that was our business before, and luckily I've been surrounded by some amazing leaders who are very open and authentic and talk about their challenges. So naturally I'm quite an overshader, and I think that you should be yourself. When I started having a coach, actually we both have like an executive coach, I was saying, oh, I wished I was, should I be a bit more alpha, because I'm at the top of the business, and like maybe less collaborative and more decisive, this is what we should do. and Paul basically, yeah, as a good coach does, pushes it back and what do you think. And end of the day, I think that the best leaders are honestly just themselves. And so people, they really know what we think. They know that we prioritize values and culture at the forefront, because the way we onboard people and the way that, you know, we constantly talk and build the community of our employee network with our team. So I think they literally can see, they get what they see what they're going to get from day one. We always say that. Like, so we're very open. We have things like, we have a Monday huddle with their entire team every week, which a lot of people think that's unusual for such a, like a big-ish organization. It's a lot of time, but it's to stay connected. It's so that we can update and talk about stuff. And we've had masses of feedback from people who've come from, you know, all the organizations that come from Dyson, for example, or awesome places around the world, and going, I can't believe how transparent you are with us about, you know, from financial to performance to like the plan to these are decisions we're thinking we're going to make. We're very open. So I think that's how it shifted. And I honestly, I've always been a bit like that. And I think it's been reinforced as the correct way to be, because you need to build an adult to adult relationship with your team. They are adults. They're adults. We want to move. Yeah. And that's how it sort of ties into kind of parenting, doesn't it? Like thinking about how you want to communicate. But yeah, and we trust people a lot. And I think it pays dividends where you're, if you trust people, you get it back and they want to turn up for work. They're not in work just now because we've given everyone summer Friday afternoons off. So that they're all sunning themselves in Edinburgh and elsewhere.
Yeah, in that beautiful summer afternoon. I mean, as you trust these people, though, and in the transparency, and I mean, obviously, there's some things that you probably don't share with everyone, but you are more open than maybe others.
Yes.
Has that allowed you to like stay involved with the business? Because obviously, it started with you guys like building this oven from like a welder down the street, just the two of you in your backyard, to now having hundreds of employees all over the world. Like, has that allowed you to let go of things and then focus on other things and look at the future? Because you go like, I'm honest with you, I trust you, there's a reciprocity, and so I can let go of some stuff that I would have maybe never imagined 5 years ago of letting go of.
Yeah, so much. Actually, weirdly, was just having a conversation about this, like, because there was a last week, we were on holiday, and then I messaged Andrew, who's our CFO, and said, you know, you're the only executive working today, and it was Friday morning. And he was like, am I? And then he was like, I'm actually not even there. I'm not in. He was having lunch with his wife, who just was about to give birth, and she did now. And we were like, oh, it's cool. Like, we have a brilliant team. So like I said, I'm incredibly trusting. I think it is a good lesson to learn early as a leader that obviously people are going to do things differently from how you do. But as long as you've got really kind of clear narrative in terms of the big stuff and the values and your vision and your mission and like how you do things, that you have to trust. And also one of the things, like, we've never done it before. Like, I think that the humbleness of genuine humbleness of going, okay, so we've never run a $200 million or pound plus company before, but here we are, and we think these things work. And and a lot, what happened during the pandemic, actually, we did quite a big hiring spree during those years, and we brought in people who really had that expertise, like middle level people and some really senior people who've really done it before in different organizations, which brought such a different richness. So yeah, like, and you know, you might disagree, but then I think it's really rare that we disagree. And if we do, then one thing I've learned is like, you can be consultative in terms of like hearing what people's point of view. And as long as you communicate why you've made a decision, that works if there's any disagreement. But Yeah, we definitely have a strong team. And then they know that. I mean, people, have you read Dan Pink's book Drive about what motivates people? Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. like they need to feel that engagement and empowered to do stuff. Like, why else would you have a job or like a job that you really care about? So getting people to that place as soon as possible where they actually can action stuff and have autonomy. And so, and then we invest a lot in people's talent. So we're doing our theme for the year is called It's All About You. And that is trying to find out where people want to take their career over the next kind of 2 or 3 years, whether it's at uni or not. It usually is. We've got really good retention because they're smart. But then like, okay, what do you need to do? There's dual sided, because we're like, I want people to take responsibility for their own career development. No one else will do it. But of course, we can help fund stuff and support opportunities and make time and space for it. But so it's like, it's been amazing. So then they did the survey. Then they have an interview with someone from our people team and talk about it. Basically, no one stops to think. And I read this article years ago, and I think it was Harvard Business Review, that big organizations, they very rarely hire the next CEO from within, because you need to start training for those positions like 3 years before. You need to be stopping and thinking, how do I get there? So like, I don't think everyone will be the CEO, but like, if they, what ambition is one of our values. So like, if you want to build your own career, you have to build that breathing space to go like, where, how do I take it? And how can I actually design it? And is there that opportunity here, and be honest about it? So that's been wildly helpful in terms of teams' sort of self-awareness, but also us getting to grips like, okay, this is what they want, and this is their specific talent and interest in the business. That's helped design the future.
Mm. Well, if Uni was one of those employees, what's Uni's 3 to 5 year plan of growth? Personal, professional, you know, is it going to get into knitting? Well, you know, like that.
Oh, new products.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things, so innovation is another one of our values. So we've got five values: kindness, passion, ambition, rigor. What was the last one? Innovation, ambition, kindness, passion. Was that them all? So innovation is clearly, you know, the category was created, an idea that didn't exist, how to make better pizza in your home oven, how to make it affordable. Idea launched, so it's part of our DNA, but making sure that we are not completely tied into like one strategy. So actually only yesterday we were talking about making sure there's that perimeter for beyond and what else there is, like we so I don't want to say too much, but I think that making sure that that is a hugely important part of our brand, thinking that a team knows that. So, you know, like years ago I remember an accountant that we worked with was like, you know, we could just keep releasing this product, it's freaking money spinner, like Uni 2 or whatever. And that made sense on a kind of like, what's the word? Keep tweaking it and like incremental like changes. But that's never how we've tried to operate. In fact, we launched often like a tech company, you know, trying to keep on pushing the envelope. So making sure that that happens. And one of the things that I do feel that has happened a little bit is that as we've got a bit bigger, things have got slower and clunkier. So and like years ago someone said, oh, as you go from 50 to 100 people you'll lose your culture. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, okay, so we're going to prioritize it so we don't, like, and work on that and talk to people about it and make sure that it's at the forefront. And it's a bit like, now I don't think as you become a bigger organization you need to lose that startup joy and passion and like agility. So bringing that back and going, you know, just because we have 50 odd people in that department doesn't mean we can't have like fluidity and like quick ideas, and like what actually works is often quite a simple and low budget thing. That's a Scottish thing coming in there, but like we, Christian and I both trained in photography, so we have a high standard of what is put out, but it also doesn't have to be, you know, like cinema level. So I think that the future of Uni will be definitely focusing on regenerative business, definitely leaning into innovation, making sure that we keep as much agility and like empower the team and invest in the team. We probably won't be hiring as many people at the rate that we've been hiring of late, which is actually quite exciting because it means that we can go, okay, we've got
We got the team. We got the team. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's a full-time job in itself, you know. Oh my gosh. So that I think very, very excited about it. And, you know, the ambition of just the regenerative business thing is absolutely huge and exciting and exhilarating, but also a wee bit daunting. And then so thinking about the fuels for our products in the future, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that is important. We've just released our first electric product, electric oven, the UniVolt, which is really, really exciting. And so yeah, awesome. What's next?
Awesome. Well, listen, congratulations. I'm so excited that we got a chance to talk and sit down.
Thank you.
I also wanted to say that part of the cookbook that I loved, that it felt like very much like a photo album, like on like a from like a summer holiday, or, well, I mean, it was all seasons, but you know, it was like, oh, this is so nice to spend time with the family. So it was so nice to sit down and spend time with you.
Oh, thank you. We need to do a new one.
Yeah,
well, we shot that with our photographer friends, and like, we definitely wanted it to be like a beautiful coffee book as well. It's like through the story. Thank you so much for reading it and for the time. I want to see your pizza pictures.
I'll send it to you. I'll send it over to Jacqueline. I'll text it to her. I have like my first one came out really good, and then I got cocky and like overloaded the second one and did a impromptu calzone, which was like still tasty but not pretty.
Yeah, emergency calzone is the way forward.
Yeah. Well, people want to follow along, see what you're up to with your regenerative business model, or just order an oven or get a pizza peel, or the doughs are pretty good too. The pre-mixed stuff is great.
And frozen dough and lots of accessories. Yeah, it's all on uni.com, so oni.com. And then that's our social handle is UniHQ. And then Threads now. Threads is a thing.
Oh, yeah, Threads.
We've got Instagram. Yeah. And YouTube. So everything is ooni.com.
Yes, and I will say I've used the YouTube videos to help me on my journey. Well, big thank you to Jacqueline and the whole team for helping set this up. We have another live song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Red's got her hood, she's running through the forest. Run faster, she's got a lot for us. She can't go home too quick. She's getting away. She knows she's got no time to waste. Oh, she's in the forest. And oh, she's coming for us. Whoa, she's super imperial. Whoa. And oh, she's in the forest. And whoa. Jack the quick, climb up your green candlestick. You're running out, but he's too slick. Jack's got your things, he's robbed your house, but you're too slow and he's gotten out. That giant's got one big bone to bear. And she's coming for us. Whoa, she's too grim for you. Whoa. And she's in the forest. And she's coming for us. Whoa, she's too grim for you. Whoa. Jack and Jill climb up their hill. Don't waste your time. No, don't stand still. I'm falling fast. I can't stand up. We're two, but soon we could be one. And mom and dad don't want us home. And Jill, she's stuck inside a hole. And Jack, he's really down on his luck. And fairy tales, they're getting old.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Rose.
Hey.
Hi. Good to see you.
Great to see you.
It's been a long time.
It's been a really long time. I was just saying to Matt earlier that I don't remember how or when exactly we met, but I know it was a long time ago, and it was in New York somewhere.
Yeah.
Summertime?
I think that anything that's like longer than 8 or 9 years, I just attribute to around.
Yeah.
And also to having a twin brother.
Mm-hmm.
Both either together or singly, generally was out 7 days a week forever. So
yes,
we just know everyone.
Yes.
But good to see you. Yeah. I always find it amazing when I reach out to bands I like yours,
mm-hmm.
And be like, oh, wow, I know the people behind them.
I know that person.
So your band.
My band.
Is really great.
Thank you so much.
And it's really interesting because a lot of your lyrics, Primo, have to deal with the kind of intersectionality of things of not being so black and white and living in the gray.
Mm-hmm.
How did you evolve into this mindset, and how do you run your lyrics through the filter of being in the gray?
That's a good question. I don't know that I have ever experienced life as black and white, though I've been in many scenarios in which external forces want it to be. And so I think there's like a constant narration that's happening in my head to just try to figure out how to live it, and how to try to walk those lines. And then the result is a lot of the lyrics come from a stream of consciousness place that I then have to go edit many, 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 many times.
Once they come out, like, how many revisions do the lyrics have to go through?
Oh, countless. I can't tell you how many.
Is it a point where your band members are like, you know, 25 is good, Rose? You're like, you know what? I really think on 37, that's when we're really going to start to get to it.
Lucky number 37.
Do they continue to evolve after they're recorded?
You know what? I feel a certain loyalty to the actual like recorded fact. So once it gets to that point, I really try to not mess with it too much. I can't think of an occasion in which I changed it after the fact.
But the meaning might evolve, or they might mean different things to you.
The meaning will constantly evolve, and I think I'm glad that I feel true to a belief that I think once the song is out there and it's being received by anybody else, it's no longer my meaning, my association no longer has meaning. It's what is you, the audience, is receiving.
But when you're on stage singing, I mean, there is some meaning that is to you of the time in which you laid it down. Does it take you back into that? Does it always put you back to that mindset?
Yeah, actually. So I think we were connected for Snacky Tunes via Jamie Fry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Jamie Fry, I met Jamie Fry years ago. He saw a basement show that we played down in like Bensonhurst or something. And he wrote a review of Prima, and he mentioned psychodrama in the review, which is something that I had never thought of before. And it was just one of those great occasions of like someone kind of like calling you out on something, or finally giving you the language to talk about what you're doing. I have pictured countless exes, lovers, people, like points of contention, like out in the crowd while I'm singing the song. And that is something that does change from time to time. Something that sometimes a song starts about one person and then suddenly it's about somebody else.
There's never been an instance where you're imagining someone and they're actually in the audience, is there?
Maybe I shouldn't say.
we don't name names, but we need to hear stories.
That may have happened. That may have happened.
Did you know they were in the audience when you started singing and then you saw them?
Yeah. There was definitely a time where I was very frustrated with a situation and also an individual. That individual certainly happened to be there. And I remember after the fact, the individual said to me, "Wow, I've never seen you so angry."
Did they know that the song was about them?
I think they figured it out.
This is like the most vague, specific story I think we've ever heard. You use like pronouns and non-descriptors. Mm-hmm. What was the song? At least the name of the song.
The song is called Master.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And there is a lyric in the song in which I say, just like you, buddy. I am faking it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they just go sit down when the song was over? Or were they just like pounding whiskey in the back? Or did they just take the shame, the shaming, the secret shaming, oh, and just stood there and enjoyed the rest of the show?
No, I hope that they got something out of it somehow. Maybe one day, if they haven't already. I don't know. Maybe they feel flattered I wrote about them, you know?
I mean, I guess it always depends the context. I guess if you're like a narcissist, it doesn't really matter the context of the song. It's just that a song is written about you at all.
Yeah. Some people are like going for that, man.
And I know that the band has been around for a few years now. Has the gray become more gray as you've had access to an outlet and lyrics and like the defining and, you know, the middle become more middling?
The middle. Well, yeah. I mean, I think in terms of just like an intellectual evolution, like the gray feels more and more relevant all the time, right?
What's a good example?
Well, politics, like what isn't political, right? But I don't know, like sexuality, for instance. I feel like in my early years, there was a lot of black and white being taught to me, and I wasn't ever able to like live with it completely. And so at first it felt like a battle, right? Which is what I think a lot of the early premium material is about. And now it's just like, okay, well, like sexuality, gender, I don't, like even like how you like live your life financially, how you have integrity. I don't know. As I get older and as I grow, it just seems like black and white almost seems like a fallacy. Like it doesn't.
Like, yeah, I mean, illusion. it just seems like something that's written down on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, I struggle with the black and white, and that's never been, it's never all or nothing.
Yeah.
Even though you sometimes feel that it is, it never is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it can be really useful in certain periods and certain moments. It's like, you're detaining children at the border. That's fucking wrong.
Yeah, that's very clear.
That's pretty black and white. That's very clear. Yeah. And so, like, there is utility, but I find that a lot of times, especially in terms of, like, personal life and inner life, it's great.
And a lot of your lyrics also deal with feminine energy and the explosion of it. And I'm curious about living in the middle of like what it means to be a feminist today and how that influences your work and how that impacts the stage performance and what you say.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm a self proclaimed like survivor of internalized misogyny, you know, like I absorb so much self-hate, and that is still something that I expect to like kind of grapple with my whole life. And I do recognize that that comes from like multitude of outside sources that I have been permeating and growing, shifting for years and years. Yeah, I don't know. It's almost like I feel like the music that I'm creating is just, it's just like an ongoing inner monologue of coming up against these things and figuring out how I feel about them. So, and I am a woman. I identify as a woman, she, her. Yeah, that's me. So like this is, it's through my lens, and I'm a lady. So yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine it otherwise. I don't think I've ever written a song from the perspective of a man. Mm. And I will say lately I've been prioritizing like my interest in female perspectives. And I like that there's more and more of them. I never felt like a minority as a person in the world or as a musician, but the more I look around, the more I see that women are underrepresented, but I see that it's a growing population and it's really exciting. It's really cool. And I definitely am biased. I'm like, want to know what women are talking about.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah. Let's
what are you going to play for us first?
I'm going to play Alter. I'm going to play Alter. This is a new song.
Great.
Yeah.
Here we go. Prima live on Snacky Tunes. Thank you. you mentioned that you're now prioritizing the female perspective. How has Prima changed you as a person and a lyricist since its conception?
Well, Prima gave me an outlet to speak and tell stories, and before then I hadn't had one. So it's I feel like it's made me a better person to have a creative outlet. There's a place that I can go to put uncomfortable feelings, vulnerability, anger, passion, things that don't necessarily always belong in certain circumstances. I mean, not to like make a case for music as therapy, but like it definitely has, it's brought a lot of people into my life. It's made a better life for me.
Where was it before Prima?
Before Prima, it was a tangle of trying to figure out how to meet other people's expectations and win approval of other folks. This was the first time I created a space for me.
And how would Prima, it's just you today, but there's two other band members.
Yeah.
How have they influenced it, and how have their perspectives kind of helped shaped the outlet and the output of the work?
Well, I've been super, super blessed to work with a bunch of different musicians in the context of this project. And so like every person along the way has like shifted my gaze radically, whether it was Butch Marigoni, who was the first drummer I ever played with, who was just like such an intense physical creature that like I went from having these like little like do-do-do songs to just being like, oh my God, I can roar physically in every way through these instruments and through my voice. And he elevated me to a whole other space, right?
I feel like we all need someone to teach us how to roar.
Yeah.
Or give us permission, like a good balance where someone's just like, you can roar.
Right.
You got this. And right? You're like, oh my God, I could be so much louder.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Isn't there like a form of therapy, like primal scream therapy or something?
Sure. If there isn't, then it's been done.
Yeah.
Or that like very bad scene from Garden State where they just scream into the void.
I mean, have you ever screamed into the void?
I don't know if I can ever consciously say that I've screamed into the void unless it's been just like I've lost my keys at the end of a drunk night, but that like that's not the same. Have you screamed into the void?
I've screamed a whole bunch. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I remember once this city, can I curse on this show? This motherfucking city was getting me so like out of my mind one winter. I was like so cooped up and crazy feeling. Remember, it was like there was snow all over the ground.
Pre-Prima, no outlet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. this is what I had to do before Prima. Put on my running shoes in the snow, ran over the Williamsburg Bridge, yelling the whole time. Like there wasn't like I got to the top and I stopped and I screamed Garden State style. I was just running and screaming. Yeah.
And like no one, and I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well,
no, it doesn't.
Doesn't totally, it make sense?
It does. I mean, I can imagine that like nine people be like, what the fuck? And one person be like, I want to date that girl. I want her in my life.
Yep.
I saw this woman running on the bridge screaming and I must find her.
Wait, shit, man. Maybe I should do it again and see if it attracts a lover.
Loves running, screaming on the bridge.
Yes.
Not at the apex the entire time. That's pretty good lung capacity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you got to train, right?
Train. So you mentioned your first drummer who gave you the permission to roar. What about the other bandmates?
So I worked for a period of time with a guitarist named Jessica Ackerley, who like exposed me to a world of jazz guitar and just like more experimental, more daring guitar playing, and that really like opened my eyes to the possibilities of the guitar rather than just like power chords, like building a song but not thinking about the actual notes being played. Mm-hmm. And since then, since I worked with Jessica, I've always loved working with jazz guitarists because they're nerds, man, and they're real good at what they do and they practice all the time and they're so smart. So I've played with a guy named Frank Rathbone who has a band called Sick Tick. Right now I'm playing with this woman, Katie Bonastoni, who is a beast, and she's amazing. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's the other wonderful thing about being a songwriter is you get to like keep on collaborating with the coolest people, and then they become part of, you know, family.
Can we hear another song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play a song called Susan, which I feel I need to preface by saying I have lifted these lyrics from the journals of Susan Sontag. And I don't know that I have permission to do that, but I have contextualized them in a mood, which is the song. I've named it after her. It's for her.
I think as long as you cite your sources, it's totally fine.
Right? I haven't recorded or released this song yet. I feel like maybe when I cross that bridge, I will figure out how legal this is. But until then, I'll just play the song. And it might give things away a little bit, but this was from an entry in her journals from before she left her husband and came out as a lover of women.
Have some new events coming up,
yeah,
that are going to be salon style, that talk about the intersection of poetry and music.
Yes.
Will it be live performances and live poetry reading, or will it be more about theory and form and how they intersect?
It's going to be both. Hi folks. Hey. We're in a little fishbowl. Mm-hmm. People eating pizza.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
10
yeah.
years of people watching us.
So,
or us watching them.
Is it comfortable for you now at this
yeah.
point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Point, yeah. The best is when little kids come up and like run in the window.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I could like, they can't hear us, can they?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I could play them a song. The salon style moment is going to be happening with the Sound Shop community. It's this rad group of, well, it's led by a Yale alum who's super, super into all sorts of kinds of music. He loves bringing different musicians together to just have moments of performance and then conversation amongst, like, colleagues maybe you never knew, you never realized you had. So his name's Ak, and I got together with him and decided that music and poetry and the intersection of how that plays out in different types of forms would be a really fun thing to explore in a evening. So we're going to have musicians who are heavily, like, conscious of poetry and their songwriting. And then I think we're also going to have a couple of poets read with some improvised music happening at the same time. So it's, and it should be full of conversation, which I'm hoping to, like, spark and also, like, be witness to, because these are, like, questions I think about all the time that I don't have any, I don't think that there's any answers to any questions about the intersection of music and poetry.
I mean, they're so aptly joined. Is there a specific feeling or intention you want people to walk away with at the end of these series of events? Not how it'll happen, but just an emotion or...
I'm hoping that in this moment, I can create a moment for people where they feel like there might be some, like, brethren around, like, oh, here are some more nerds who are interested in, like, the same things that I am, you know? Because I feel a lot of times when I'm in the like DIY rock community, Brooklyn music community, I find myself surrounded by people that I see as, like, really talented musicians and musicians and people who have been studying music their whole life, playing music their whole life. And I came to music through a more circuitous route of studying writing first. So I feel like sometimes I'm a writer's musician, and sometimes I'm feeling, like, lonely. I'm like, where are my people? So maybe it's just a self-serving opportunity for me to try to make some friends. I don't know. But I feel like anytime I meet someone, a songwriter, like Katie, for instance, who's playing guitar in Prima right now, she has her own project called Katie the King, and she's hyper involved in a, like, a poetic process. And meeting her and hearing her work was just so heartwarming to me. I'm like, oh, there's someone else who is thinking about this stuff. So,
so weird to feel alone in the city.
I mean, when are you not feeling alone in the city?
There are times.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I guess. How do you not feel alone? What makes you feel less alone?
Well, the people in your life.
Yeah.
And also, I think just finding community, like, I guess existing at part of, like, heritage or the work that I do, or just friendship.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you move here, it's very lonely. I think, like, the city is isolating in the day to day.
Yeah.
But I think that there are more connections here than I would say in other cities that I've been to.
Well, right. And I know that your brother moved to LA. Mm-hmm. This criticism of New York that you're raising is exactly the criticism that I hear of LA all the time. Like, it's one of the most alienating, lonely places unless you have folks who can, like, pull you into the fold, right? Is, like, how's he doing out there?
He's great. He just had he and his wife, she did a lot of the work. she did most of the work. He was there in the beginning. But he, you know, they just had a baby girl and happy and just, you know, settled in. So,
oh, so your uncle. Oh
yeah. So, but, and they have a good community, but I don't know. I think that in this, particularly in New York, it takes a while to find the people that you connect with.
Yeah.
But when you do, they've also had, like, a similar struggle to be like, so when you meet them, it's like, oh my gosh, it's like we've known each other for 2 minutes and 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though you've just met, because, like, in the same way that you just said you met Katie, it's like, wow, I've just been doing my thing. And then when you meet, you're like, I understand your entire language and being.
Yeah. No, it's so nice. The city is so beautiful, and it's so full of so many people. And I think a lot of times it's also, like, it's intense and it's exhausting, and you might feel the need to, like, protect yourself. But whenever you do go out and branch out, we're a city of misfits. So many people have fled here from so many other places. So many people grew up here and are, like, sticking it out here. It's just, there's so many people here. There's so many people to befriend and get along with and do things with. And just, I don't know. I'm such a hermit. I want to be at home, like, reading books and writing songs. And if I do too much of that, I'll go nuts. I have to, yeah. It's like an effort to make myself go get out.
You have to live in the middle.
I have to live in the middle of the gray.
thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We want to make sure we have time for one more song, but where can people find you, listen to your work, watch your videos, which are super rad as well and really fun,
thank you.
And find out about your salons?
Bandcamp continues to be the place that I post music,
love,
new
love
music.
Bandcamp.
Yeah, right?
They're the best.
Can't go wrong with it.
No, they're doing
the best work.
Yeah.
So Bandcamp is always a great tool for me and a great place to go, prima.bandcamp.com. I also tend to post weird, somewhat illicit videos on occasion on my Instagram, and that is also a place that I'm sharing information. So that is at Prima Sounds Like. But otherwise, yeah, stay tuned. There's going to be a new record and lots of fun stuff happening later this year and early next year that I don't feel totally privy to speak to.
That's fine.
But those are two places that people could go to find out more and hear
Perfect.
More. Yeah.
Well, big thanks to Christopher Krohner for coming on and talking about his new cookbook. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. What's the name of the last song?
Name of the last song, and this is the newest song, is called The Witness.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We'll see you all next week.
To say I wouldn't wish it upon a soul, but some of us have earned a little more. Cosmic judgment, or whatever you call it. We'll be right back.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.